The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We are back. Second half of the show is live, and we will continue with more of your phone calls. Matt is in Arkansas. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to kind of revisit the Stetson Bennett discussion yesterday, not because I care where Stetson Bennett will be next year, because I don't, but I find, the potential effects of NIL fascinating. And I think this situation with Stetson really creates a more important question than, you know, where he's going to, you know, that he's staying or what kind of year he's going to be. And that is, you know, has Stetson Bennett realized that his market value is higher in college than it would be in the NFL due to NIL? And, you know, is this the beginning of a trend for some players, you know, to forgo the draft or forgo the NFL, or especially in college basketball, to cash in on what they see as a higher market value due to NIL?
Well, I think there are some players who probably could make more money, but not many. And, you know, the real question, if you flip it around for Stetson Bennett, is what were his options had he walked away? Could he have made the NFL? I'm not saying he couldn't have caught on to a team, but he certainly wouldn't have been a high draft choice. We know that. See, it seems like he would have that he maybe it seems to me that he's hurting his own value by staying, especially if it doesn't go well. And, you know, had he walked away, I think he could have walked into almost anything he wanted to do.
Could be. I think that if he, you know, he was unsure about his future in the NFL, I mean, it wouldn't, you know, he had an unbelievable year, but it wouldn't be difficult to be nervous about what he was going to look like in the NFL. And, I mean, you know, given the two options, maybe he opted to stay.
Well, I wonder, though, Matt, if he could have made more money in private business. I mean, he had just there are plenty of people, I could give you the names if you wanted, who have capitalized off of their championships. Now, he still can, even if this year, let's say Georgia goes 10-2. He's still the champion. He's still the quarterback of the national championship team. That is not going to go away. Buck Ballou has lived off of that win for 40 years. Jay Barker, quarterback to Alabama in 92, he's still living off of that. Others are as well. So it's not uncommon to capitalize off of national championships, in spite of what happens after that. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate you being there. Eric is up next in Georgia.
Hey, Paul. You were spot on JT Daniels, and that fellow has no idea how the Georgia teammates felt about him. The thing I'd like to talk about is the two uses of the portal. The legitimate one where a kid says, I'm never going to get any playing time here, and I need to leave. That's beneficial to the kid. It's beneficial to the coach that the team he's leaving, because it frees up a scholarship for a kid in the future versus a player who was never going to be productive to the team. The other one, of course, is the poaching of players through financial incentives. And I'm wondering if you have the answer or know how much of the complaining by the coaches you talk to are about the legitimate use or the poaching.
Eric, that's all the coaches talk about privately. And you know, you'll hear Saban, Dabo, others talk publicly about the NCAA. But what they're really saying is we can't allow poaching. We can't allow people coming in and literally buying players off of my roster.
Right. So they're fine with the legitimate use, mostly.
Well, I don't think there are many issues with NIL per se. the issues come into using NIL for the transfer portal, which is what's happening.
Right, but are they saying that to you, or just in general they're, you know, about the portal?
Well, the portal, what you hear, and I think we had, I don't know, who was it the other day that talked about this? One of the head coaches was talking about a specific time where you have to limit the access. You know, I think the SEC has some clauses where after a certain date you can't go from SEC team to SEC team. But there are no national standards for that. There may be one day, and I don't know where they are on that. But, you know, you heard Shane Beamer 30 minutes ago talk about, you know, he doesn't know what tomorrow will bring in terms of one of his starters deciding to leave to go somewhere else.
Right, but, I mean, that most likely starters at schools are the ones that would be poached.
Yeah, you would think so. It doesn't mean – I mean, Alabama might be a little different, you know, with
Absolutely.
Their roster. But but Alabama just took a player, one of Vanderbilt's best players. Now, if you're Vanderbilt, you have a fairly small supply of top-notch players, and you just lost one to Alabama. Georgia Tech lost one to Alabama. So, yeah. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Really interesting comments. Mike is up next in Kentucky.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today, brother?
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, you know, you'd have thought they would have sat down with some sort of a think tank when they saw the writing on the wall that NIL was coming and set some guidelines, but I guess that would have made too much sense. Yeah, I'd like to talk about Kentucky basketball a little bit, Paul. You know, the drums of discontent are kind of slightly beating in the background for Calipari, but now that Krzyzewski's gone, that was the one school out there that could take a player that Kentucky really coveted. You know, I'm talking like count them on one hand, best players in the country. So recruiting for Kentucky might even get better than it already is. And then a couple of more years, Calipari won't have no excuses. What do you think, Paul?
Well, I don't think he has any anymore. And by the way, I don't think Mike Krzyzewski leaving is going to change the calculus very much. There are other threats out there. Nobody's recruiting better than Eric Musselman at Arkansas. I mean, they're about to have one of the top recruiting classes of all time. Nate Oates is recruiting. Pearl's recruiting. Barnes. The field has gotten a lot more competitive for Calipari. It's just not about Mike Krzyzewski. Duke is still a brand name without Krzyzewski. I know a lot of people think the program will completely roll over, but I think they had the number one recruiting class this most recent year. Reed is in Kansas. You're on the air. Hello, Reed.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hey there, buddy.
So I heard that you called Texas A&M the villain of college football. Why is that?
Well, I had Jimbo Fisher on the other day, and I was joking with him. Maybe I wasn't joking. I said, how do you feel now being the villain of college football because of your success? What I meant really was they have done so well that people are now shooting rocks and bottles at them as opposed to at other schools like Alabama, Georgia, et cetera.
Yeah, and they're not doing anything wrong really either.
So. They are just using every available means to recruit, which is the way the system mm-hmm. is now developed to deal with.
Yeah, well, hey, I had another track meet today, and it was snowing, so that was kind of fun.
Hold on a second, Reed. It is April 13th.
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 And it was snowing.
And in Kansas, mm-hmm. You were supposed to run track today, and it snowed?
Well, we still had it. It was at Emporia State University, which is a D2 college, and it was snowing.
How'd it go for you?
It was a light snow, but it was still snowing. Yeah, like I did pretty good. We got third in the 4x4. So
that's good. Yeah. Well, listen, don't despair. Hopefully, that will be the last snow you see. By the way, I was out somewhere a couple of years ago. I'll tell you where it was. It was the Grand Canyon on May 24th, and on the way about 40 miles out. I think it was Flagstaff. I don't know where it was. I mean, literally a blizzard. So it can snow late. There's a lot of snow out there right now. We are going to take a break. No snow here. And we'll be talking a little bit more about the NFL draft coming up in a few minutes. Tony Vitello, the head coach of the number one ranked Tennessee Vols, will join us in the next hour.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
2 weeks and a day before the NFL draft, we bring in Jeff Darlington, who covers the NFL. Always good to have Jeff on the program. Jeff, before we get to the NFL, I know you just spent a week in Augusta following Tiger and everything else along, especially the Tiger part of it. Describe to us what that experience was like.
Oh, Paul, it was awesome, man. I got into Augusta on Sunday, so I was there as sort of things built around the idea that Tiger was going to play. I've never seen a practice round like the one when Tiger came out there and played with Justin Thomas. The galleries were unbelievable. The energy was electric. Once he made the cut, that to me was his win. You know, I think there was a sense that the injury was really kind of hindering him going into the weekend. But the energy was just, it was unbelievable. A magnetism like I've never seen in a practice round. And he still got it, man. He is the needle, Paul.
In terms of just what he looked like, when it was all over, I mean, the physical toll had to be immense. What kind of shape do you think he's in right now?
I think it's all the type of situations that he'll be able to recover from it. It's a matter of kind of building into having the type of stamina that can get him through 4 days. But make no mistake, I was talking to people throughout the weekend that were making very clear that he was in a lot of pain. And even coming off of his Saturday round, you know, he said something like, I felt better. For him to even be that vulnerable shows you what kind of pain Tiger Woods was in. And that's why I think he was so pleased. And you saw the smile on his face coming off the 18th on Sunday that he accomplished something he set out to do. And for the first time in Tiger's career, it wasn't winning.
He also made the golf world forget about Phil Mickelson, which I'm sure Phil appreciated. Yeah. He's the defending champion of the PGA in a month. What did you hear anything about Phil while you were over there?
I'm sure Augusta also appreciated the distraction that Tiger provided. And look, I think a lot of the golfers that I talked to have been very clear about the fact that they're really not thinking about what Phil is going to do. And I know that all of us are intrigued by the idea of this golf league getting started up, but I think the PGA has found itself in a very confident position, maybe based on even the comments that Phil had made that put him in the hot water in the first place and probably maybe detracted from some of these high-profile players from making that leap. And ultimately, though, I got to say, maybe it was that Phil wasn't there, but I did not sense much of a distraction on Augusta, especially when it came to that new golf league.
Your main gig is covering the NFL, which will hit a high point in 2 weeks with the draft. And I know, some drafts, there's so much expectation and surprise. As we are getting closer, what is the conversation about the number one pick right now?
Well, it's fascinating because, you know, a lot of people obviously have – it's going to be a defensive player. I mean, I think we all feel pretty confident in that just because the quarterback class isn't all that heralded. But the idea that suddenly a guy like Trayvon Walker could be even considered at number one is something that continues to fester. And I think the fascinating component of that is obviously that maybe his college productivity doesn't match being a number one overall pick. But the one thing that keeps coming up, and I think Dan Orlovsky mentioned this, is that, you know, Jacksonville is still a team that could potentially look in that direction. You've got a guy in Trent Baalke. When he was with San Francisco, he was really all about physical traits over college performing. And this with Walker feels like exactly that type of guy. I'm not saying it happens. I'm just saying it is fascinating as the draft nears closer that that is even a major point of conversation.
Yeah, and Jeff, he's moved up the so-called mock drafts. He's up to number six from considerably farther back. What would it take at this point to unseat some of the people like Hutchinson and others at the top?
It takes one team, Paul, and that's, you know, we see that with quarterbacks every year. And when you don't have a quarterback to reach for, which seems to be the case, even if, say, Malik Willis was to go six to Carolina, it takes a team, like I said, like Trent Baalke saying, you know, that that's our future superstar, and I don't care what he did in college. You know, the one thing I'll say about the NFL is, The decision makers are a lot of arrogant men, maybe for good reason, but they don't feel like they need to look at 4 years of college tape to decide what a guy can do in the NFL. And for good and plenty of times for bad, that can be the case. So for someone like Walker, that certainly could be the case this year.
I've heard it was Orlovsky, I think, who just unloaded on the quarterback class. Malik Willis, you know, he was not high on Corral. Kenny Pickett's in there.
Yeah.
Who is likely to be picked first, and how high could that individual go?
Well, you know, like I said, you got Carolina at six. And I think that what we saw in the NFL with all the craziness that occurred in free agency, or I should just say the offseason in general with the quarterback position, is a result of teams looking at both free agency, which really was unheralded. I mean, Mitch Trubisky and Jameis Winston were the two biggest quarterbacks in free agency. And then in a draft class in which we're looking at Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis as the two biggest prospects, you saw teams try to solidify their quarterback room before they even got to this point in the draft. So I don't necessarily see teams reaching for those players, even though you do have a team like Carolina, which is going to pay way too much for Sam Darnold this year and needs to find a way to go a cheap route. And we all know that the draft is exactly that for these teams. So that's the one team you can look at potentially reaching. They're at six. So you could see them looking at Willis or maybe Pickett in that spot.
And the Carolina GM a couple weeks ago talked about how much he loved Cam Newton in spite of how he looked last year. I know he had some comments this week that have gone over rather poorly about women.
Right.
What is Cam Newton's status right now?
You know, I go back to when he first became available before the Patriots ultimately signed him a couple years ago. It took until August before any team was willing to sign him, and that team ultimately became the Patriots. But there was a 4 to 5 month gap when he was completely available and could sign with any team. And 31, if you include the Patriots in that, 31 teams were not interested in taking a shot on him. Now, Cam might have been asking for too much money at that point. We don't know what he's asking for now. But there wasn't much of a market for him then. And now he's gone through Carolina and he's gone through New England. And I kind of sense that this might be the end of the road for Cam in the NFL. It takes one team. But to me, those teams had their shot with Cam a couple years ago. And I don't know that he's done that much in these two seasons since to show any of those teams that maybe now is the time for them to take another chance.
And Jeff, I don't need to remind you that we thought we were at the end of Tom Brady a couple of months ago. Can you take us through the, you know, when that story first came out? And it took a while, and then he announced he was leaving, and now he's back. And,
right.
And what happened?
One of the fascinating components, I think, Paul, when I kind of reflect on this past several months, is when there was talk from the end of the season to the point when we reported that he was retiring, to 3 days later when he actually did, that you knew that it was festering inside of him, the idea of retirement, but it never felt like, even when he did retire, it never felt like all of the reasons you would expect for a guy who played 20 years. It almost felt more like when you hear a player just sort of tired at the end of a season. It felt like that. He felt like he didn't want to do the farewell tour this year where every team was saying, oh, yeah, let's celebrate Tom. He didn't want that. He wanted it to be unceremonious almost, to where he could just drift off into the sunset. And those were all reasons that don't necessarily feel, he still didn't feel ultimately that satisfied even as he was retiring. And that's why I think it was sitting in a lot of our heads that kind of were close to the situation, like, I'm not fully sure that he's done, even though he's saying right now he's done. I'd say the biggest surprise to me was that it only took him like a month ultimately to say, you know what, I'm not cut out for domestic life just yet. I need another season at least of the football life.
Which just seemed very odd, and you've covered so many of these stories that, you know, you always have that final news conference that puts the bow on it. And when he didn't do that,
right,
you had to think about what is he doing?
You know, it's funny, Paul, that actually, he never really wanted that. And that was kind of what I was saying about the farewell tour. The Instagram post that he essentially put out that Tuesday, where he announced his retirement in a very, like, kind of simple way, was the way he wanted it to be. And I guess that, to your point, probably could have led a lot of us to have pause and say, this doesn't exactly feel the way you would expect someone like Tom Brady to put a stamp on his career. And maybe that's because in the back of his head, he was sitting there saying, man, I don't know if I'm ready. I guess I'm going to go ahead and call it a career. And ultimately, we found out exactly what he was thinking because it didn't last long.
Yeah. Great stuff on that and everything else. Jeff, thanks for making time for us. It's always great to see you.
Well, of course. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Jeff Darlington, of course, was part of that group who broke that initial Tom Brady story, who refused to acknowledge that was accurate. And then he did, and no, he didn't. We'll take a break.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Morning, Marty and McGee, 7 a.m. Billy is up next in Philadelphia. Hello, Billy.
Hi. Can you hear me, Paul?
I sure can. Thank you.
My question is about the Big Ten. I haven't followed it. I hope you have. They've been saying forever that the SEC is just a bunch of pros anyway. And so who cares? But I don't think a Penn State or an Ohio State or Michigan is going to allow themselves to get knocked out of any kind of bowl contention. They've got to get in the game somehow, don't they?
Well, Ohio State will have no difficulty hanging with everyone else because Ohio State is essentially an SEC school that plays up north. But Michigan and Penn State are different. You know that. And we had a guy on from Michigan the other day, John Bacon. And they are struggling to adapt to what is going on. Now, it may not really matter because I don't think Michigan lately has been recruiting at that level anyway. Penn State's a different type of recruiting animal. They still recruit well, but nobody's recruiting like Alabama, Georgia, and A&M right now.
Yeah. I just wonder if they'll step it up or acknowledge the fact that they've got to step it up, or they'll get involved in the portal or something like that. I just haven't heard anything from them about them.
Billy, if you're thinking about transferring and you can go anywhere you want, why would you go to Michigan?
So I can say I'm better than everybody else. That's
yeah,
why.
No,
that's
I mean, if your options are Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, and Texas A&M, I think I'll go to Ann Arbor.
Give me a hard
who
one.
Wanted to leave the program last year to go to the Minnesota Vikings, but he didn't get the job.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thank you. I'm just curious. I think it's worth following. That's all.
It was a good call. Thank you. Yeah. I seemed like I had said some of that before, but Gary is in South Carolina. You're on the air. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, bud?
We're doing great. Thank you.
Good. I listen and watch your program on a pretty regular basis and hear all the controversy and arguing and sometimes the language and all that stuff. And I just want to kind of change the atmosphere a little bit. I signed a professional contract with the Los Angeles Angels in 1963. And they sent me to a place called Rock Hill, South Carolina, which I had never heard of before in 1963. And I played here that season. And I met a beautiful young lady here in Rock Hill, and we got married 4.5 months after we met. And we went, after the season, we went back to California and stayed out there, and they sent me to Washington State the next year, and I hurt my arm, and they didn't know anything about Tommy John surgery and all that kind of stuff back then. But anyway, they released me, and we went back to California, and we went through some hard times and some times without anything to eat. And oh, by the way, the Angel signed me for $400 a month.
Oh, man.
And I would have played for nothing if they would have fed me and put a roof over my head. That's how much I love baseball. But anyway.
Hey, Gary, I know this is a question you probably thought about, but had you not gotten hurt, what was your potential?
Well, I went to a tryout camp, and there was probably 200 guys there. And out of the 200 guys that were there, there was only 3 of us that they signed to a contract.
Wow.
I'm from West Virginia, originally from Huntington, West Virginia. And we went undefeated my senior year in high school. And I was 11-0, pitched the semifinals and the final game of the state championship on consecutive nights.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you a question, Gary. It's the big topic in sports today. You may have seen it. Clayton Kershaw had a perfect game going through 7 innings, and they took him out.
Oh, that would have broke my heart.
Yeah, and he said afterwards that he'd had a short spring and because of the strike, and the manager was concerned. The manager did this. This is the second time he's done this, by the way. You'll hear all about it. It's the biggest topic in professional sports tonight.
Well, you know, we only played 7 innings in high school.
Right.
I pitched 7 innings of no-hit ball on Monday night. I came in relief on Wednesday night and pitched 3 innings of no-hit ball. And I pitched on Thursday night and pitched 6 2/3 innings of no-hit ball. And a guy finally got a single before the inning was over.
Gary, and what was your what was your go-to pitch?
They call it a major league curveball now, but it was a drop, the old-fashioned drop that, you know, you threw it straight overhand and it fell straight down. But that's not what I wanted to talk about.
I'm glad. You must have been tough to hit. I mean,
well,
there are a lot of broken-hearted West Virginians thinking about their last time at bat against you.
Well, I did pretty good. But what I wanted to talk about, we went back to California, and stayed out there a while, and one of the things I wanted to say was we lost four babies to premature birth, and my daughter, who is now 51 years old, was born 2 months premature, and she made it through, and I've got a son that's 5 years older than her. But,
oh, my goodness.
We went through some hard times after I hurt my arm. We went through some hard times and some times when we even went hungry. But we came back here, got settled down, raised our family. We were married 52 and a half years, and I lost her 6 years ago.
Oh, my.
And she was my heart. She was all I lived for. And I told my daughter when I lost her, I said, I'm ready to go with her. I want to go too. My daughter said, no, Dad, you can't do that. You need to stay here. I need you. So here I am. But just wanted to change the narrative a little
bit.
Well,
Gary, I'm glad you did. And I mean, no words can be offered to help what you have been through. But what great memories you must have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She was my heart. She would we celebrated Christmas here at the house.
What was her name,
she,
Gary?
Pardon?
What was her name?
Janice. We called her Jan.
Wow.
And she would, everybody would have Christmas presents, and we were all opening them and everything. And then she did what she called a goodie bag. And she knew what everybody liked and what everybody wanted and all that kind of stuff. And she would fill that big bag up with different things that each one of the kids liked or each one of the people that were here liked, and did what she called a goodie bag. And we've got two granddaughters, and they would come spend the night with us on Friday night, and she would go upstairs, and she would take some old clothes that she had, and she would dress them up, and they would come downstairs and be the beauty queens from the past. But we just had a great life, and God has been so good to us, and I'm just so thankful that I was sent back to Rock Hill, South Carolina, which I didn't know where I was going.
Well, Gary, you be well, and thanks so very much for sharing your story with all of us. We're heading to a break right now. We'll talk to the baseball coach at Tennessee, the number one team in the country, in a few minutes. Until then, more of your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back as the third hour begins to wind down. Mario is up next. Hello.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Hey there. Good afternoon.
I've been listening to your show since 97. I used to live in Birmingham, but I'll make it quick. I was actually coming back from Lake Martin, going to Birmingham when Tammy had her wreck, bless her heart, and they had the highway blocked off, and that was just terrible. But I want to pay you a compliment the way you handled it that next Saturday on your show. You know, you were talking about her, and at the end, your voice cracked, and I was watching that, and I just busted out crying, and it just made me think greatly of you, my friend, how you handled that. So,
Mario, thank you for saying that. And, I don't know. And we've lost various callers over the years. You probably remember when Shane passed away. But,
oh, yeah.
But in every one of the cases, and I know this sounds like I'm qualifying death, I'm not, hers was not expected. Everyone else had some issues, and it was just shocking. I think all of us remember everything about that day. We were in an interesting position. I don't know if I've ever discussed it. I was in Columbia, South Carolina, interviewing Darius Rucker. I just finished I think someone called me, and we had to go over to Athens from there to do the show, and we didn't really know what to do because we had Kirby Smart on and several other guests. So we waited a little while to break the story because it just it was we really we were not we I knew we knew what was going to happen and when it did it was those were probably that was probably the hardest hour and a half that any of us here had because we knew what was about to transpire and what did was unimaginable.
Sure. And me, you know, I'm an Auburn person, so I just loved it to death. To a lighter note, Legend, I was just curious what Legend's, what his major was at Alabama. Do you know?
Who was that?
Hello? Legend.
Legend.
Do you know?
I'll ask him when he calls in. How about that?
Yeah, you may want to just skip that. But,
Hey, thank you for sharing that information, and you take care of yourself. You be well. Appreciate it. Steve is in Kentucky. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Okay, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Last time we talked about the demise of Don Henley and the effect that Jackson Brown and Linda Ronstadt had on the Eagles.
Oh, my goodness. We sure did.
That was something else. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about is something that I think – since you have so many callers all around the country, they're probably not aware of this, although they've probably been severely affected by COVID. I found out and am waiting for reimbursement from the federal government for expenses related to a death caused by COVID. FEMA has a disaster relief program that if you call them, they will get personal information about you and your bank and everything else, and give you two numbers, a disaster number and a federal ID number. You get your receipts where it shows that you've paid for the casket, the funeral service, the transportation, everything, including the etching on the headstone. And they will deposit a maximum of $9,000 into your account.
That, I was completely unaware of that. That's interesting, Steve. Well, thank you for
sharing.
Yeah,
well,
that.
You know, I thought a lot of people might be affected by that. You know, I personally have been, and it's something I think needs to be out there. But thank you for your time.
Thank you very, very much. I hope people heard that. Al is up next in Georgia. Good afternoon, Al.
Hey, how you doing, my brother?
Al, we are doing great. Thank you.
Outstanding. I got a question for you. And I mean, I've been listening to you for many years, but you told me how technical and political and all this other stuff is. But could you explain to me, why do we have an NCAA? What do they do?
Well, the NCAA many years ago was formed as the governing body of college athletics, and it, there was some good intention. And then it became the organization that not only governed it, but administered the various tournaments, like the NCAA basketball tournament, the NCAA baseball tournament, the softball tournament, et cetera. So, I mean, that became the main need. Now, what happened, though, is in 1984, I believe, the Supreme Court, in a case brought by the University of Georgia and Oklahoma, struck down the NCAA's power to limit the amount of time television, the television that, you, that a school could appear on television. I'm running out of time here, but that's really when college football broke away. We'll continue that in the final hour. Also, the Tennessee baseball coach will join us.